Welcome back, folks. Second hour of The War Room, alexjoneslive.com. There's a phenomenon we've been covering for a while called diversity ad nauseum. So much diversity, it makes you sick. They call the police racist. Now crime exploded. A couple years ago, they decided grades were racist and a barrier to achievement, so they got rid of grades. How is that going? Well, let's find out.
I was teacher of the year at John F. Kennedy Middle School in Antioch this past year, and blue ribbon teacher of the year for the district. What you have in front of you right now is my resignation letter. I resigned in May. You can read those three pages at your leisure, but I've heard a lot of positive data in this meeting, and I just wanted to give you some facts from my firsthand experience. So first, district leaders asked me to fabricate grades for a parent who sat in the office for hours until her daughter's failing grades were changed. It creates false entitlement. What happens when these kids lie, cheat, and cry their way through school and end up as future doctors, police, or politicians? When will you protect the future of our society? Second, that same parent has harassed over 30 teachers. Teachers have filed police reports, and entire school districts have had, or entire schools have had restraining orders against her. Yet she's still allowed on school property, showing up to field trips her child didn't earn, and filming other students. When will you stop prioritizing parents' feelings over the safety of our teachers and our students? I heard you also mention that we're closing gaps in teacher vacancies. I want the public to know that many of those are filled with uncertified teachers. My third point, HR withheld money from my employee paycheck as well as many others. They took $500 from me specifically, and it put me behind on my mortgage. And then they sent out an email saying that they had to do it to pay other employees. When will you pay teachers what they are owed? My fourth point, the news reports that behavioral issues are down. They are not. We are simply banned from reporting them, forcing us to keep disruptive students in the classroom. Statistics are being skewed to protect the district, not our children. Our children cannot read and write. They cannot do basic math. And we spend 40 hours a week with these students, so we know them better than the district and those fake numbers. Please stop undermining our professional decisions because, honestly, it's breaking the efficiency and it's giving HOA quality. So, Dr. Battle, my question to you.
Thank you. The time.
Okay.
I literally broke down in the middle of class because I'm teaching seniors. These kids are leaving high school and going to college, hopefully. After they finished, we had two paragraphs to read, one sentence complete to write. I gave them the sentence stems. I basically completed the sentence for them in the model. These are 17 and 18-year-old kids, and they couldn't fill in four words. I gave them the scenario. We annotated together. I gave them the answers before we even had the problem, and they couldn't do it. I don't know. I simply don't know where the problem is. This is only day two, and I have seniors who simply cannot read and seniors who cannot write. They cannot write. They can reason. They have the ability to defend their reasoning if it's talking to their homeboy, but applying that to a written text, two paragraphs, and they couldn't do it.
Sounds like you're a racist, dude. Sounds like we got a racist teacher over here applying, you know, white standards to non-whites. That's racist, sir. It's racist to want people to be able to read. It's racist to have standards. Get over.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigly has launched an online pharmacy 1776RX.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benbenzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
Welcome back, folks. Not sure what everybody was expecting the results to be. Not exactly surprised that nobody in our schools can read anymore. Just one of these things, you know. I pointed the hose at my face and turned it on and I got wet. What? That's crazy. You're telling me that getting rid of standards and passing every single student, regardless of grades, has backfired? What? No way. You're telling me that having to spend half of your school's budget on translators because your entire school population is filled with foreigners that don't speak English, and now the American students are suffering as a consequence? What? No way. No way. Do you understand? Like, that's literally what we're literally dealing with. People going, we stopped giving kids grades and now they can't read. What has happened? Well, you stopped giving them grades. You stopped making sure they're actually learning anything. What are you talking about? Of course, the real absurdity is like, but we gave them all Chromebooks. We made every kid go home and live in their room for a year, and we gave them a Chromebook so they could chat with their friends and watch pornography, and for some reason, none of them can read now. Maybe we should give them another Chromebook, you know? Maybe we should stop testing them for reading. Then you won't have the failing grades anymore. It's like that video of the guy saying, yeah, you lower crime by not charging crime or by legalizing the things that are crimes. It's just the mindset of our world at this point. Oh, these kids are failing. Stop taking grades. Problem solved. Okay, great. We'll see how that turns out down the road. It's going to turn out by our not being able to keep our lights on anymore. Like South Africa, we're going to have to give up our nuclear program because we can't handle it safely anymore. And we're going to import a bunch of Indians who, by the way, also didn't pass their classes, but paid money to get a degree. So we're not training our kids. We're allowing our kids to wallow in failure and misery and achieve nothing and not even know how to read. Meanwhile, we're replacing them with barely educated foreigners who also can't read English. Just not the type of actions anybody who wanted something good for America would be engaged in. Let's go out to your calls here. We got a couple callers all about the Candace debate. We'll start with Sean in California. Did you watch the debate between Candace Owens and Andrew Wilson? If so, what did you think, Sean?
Well, to be honest, Harrison, I think what Candace was doing was trying to avoid a trap to get sued because she learned from the misfortune that was done to Alex. So I think Candace's coyness, we're going to be in an era where everybody's going to be afraid to make statements because they made Alex into a straw man and destroyed the previous network. So I think that's why where her coyness was. And to be honest, Wilson didn't exactly really bring anything to the table. I'm not saying that as a stand for Candace. I'm saying that as someone who can look at patterns and notice, for example, whenever the left always does a gun attack, they always try to go after the AR-15, so the shooter always has an AR-15 type gun. In this case, it was a German Mauser, and I'm like, I haven't heard about Mausers since World War II, and who were the Germans fighting back then? Oh, wait.
Right.
So I'm just saying, maybe there was, you know, some tells here that people, you know, are missing out on. Some of it, yes, is speculation, but the thing is Candace is correct and that she's pointing out there's certain things that had to be done procedurally. My irritants at the Kyle Rittenhouse trial was the same thing, that once the trial was underway and the defense was up there, they weren't swinging for the fences. They were asking tiddly little questions, and Rittenhouse, if not for the incompetency of the people, for example, that he shot, you know, the guy with the rebuilt arm and all that, if it wasn't for the incompetency of the prosecution, Rittenhouse very easily could have been jailed because he had a weak defense. Defense attorneys, prosecuting attorneys, and the judge all go golfing together. It's not a big secret. You know, it's a club, like George Carlin said. So
yeah.
Candace was very coy because she knew that somebody's hoping to sue her and get that $300,000 right back. It was like watching a game of cat and mouse, except you know, both the cat and the mouse are a little on the retarded side. And like I said to Rex on another occasion, Candace used the shotgun approach. It's sloppy, but it allows you to drop, you know, things that don't fit. And someone like Alex with experience, he's good because he's going to always sharpshoot something and show that, you know, everything is a lie because he knows, boom, like one good shot, he takes out a piece of the narrative and can hold it up and say, look, this is a lie. We shouldn't be satisfied right yet. But he's, you know, not going to jump over and say, oh, I know Tyler Robinson didn't do it. But I could see Twiggs, for example, you know, being an accomplice or at least obstruction of justice coming down that guy's way. I don't know what type of deal he got, but this debate didn't really further anything other than showing the YouTube chats how many bots they flooded the comments with. There were a lot of bots.
Yeah, that was honestly the blackpilling thing, was watching the chat the whole time and just being like, what are you people watching? Like, what are you looking at? Because you're certainly not watching the same thing I am. You know, I'm sure there is an aspect of that. I mean, that's obvious. If you watch the Stu Peters, Andrew Wilson debate, I mean, Stu Peters comes out and says it and is like, you're just trying to bait me into saying something to get me sued. That's obviously like very much in the forefront. But the idea that what Candace Owens is doing is anything equivalent or even in the same ballpark as Alex Jones and Sandy Hook. I mean, that is crazy. That's crazy. And, you know, there's still legal stuff going on, so I can't talk too much about it. But I'll just say one of the charges, the defamatory actions that we were hit with, was literally questioning the guilt, or like questioning the, not guilt, but like sadness, questioning the grief of one of the widows. It's like, if that was the standard back then, everybody who's ever talked about Erica Kirk is guilty of that. So it's just like, from back in 2012, where nobody questioned anything and anybody going, I don't really know about this, it's like, you are going to jail. Like, you know, to where now it's like, well, I said Erica Kirk killed Charlie, but I winked while I said it. And then, like, that's fine. It's like, if you're worried about having done to you what was done to Alex Jones, like, they've crossed that line a billion times over, so much more than, I mean, Alex never was the Sandy Hook guy. He didn't go for a year every day making updates about Sandy Hook. Like, that was never what he talked about, like, two times when other guests came on and it was their topic that they covered. The comparison to me between what Candace Owens is doing and what Alex is doing is so far out of whack, it doesn't even make sense. And if you actually know what the case of Alex Jones was, you know that it was fraudulent. There wasn't anything defamatory that he actually said. So it's kind of like, how do you defend yourself against a crime you didn't commit? You know what I mean? It's like, well, you should be really careful because my friend got a jaywalking ticket here, and it's like, okay, but he got a jaywalking ticket while he was standing on the curb. So, you know, it's like, is crossing the street really that big of a deal? It's like, you get, you know, if they want to target you, you don't have to actually do anything for them to come up with something to charge you with. So I don't know what Candace's thought is exactly, but if you're going by the Alex Jones standard, she's exceeded that many, many times over and repeatedly. So she doesn't seem that careful. All I'm saying is she doesn't seem that concerned. about it, but I appreciate the call and the input, Sean. Great stuff. Let's go to Baker in California. Baker, thank you for calling in on the Candace debate. You're on the air.
Yo. Yeah, my problem with this whole thing is that I'm not on the, necessarily on the side of Candace, like the Fort Chewbacca or whatever, but like everyone that's saying Tyler did it is just assuming he did it because it's like the 9/11 thing. They're just assuming it was an inside job because they're like, oh, what are you suggesting? The people on Tyler Robinson, they're just assuming he did it because the other option is that there is a conspiracy, and so they're just kind of weighing their evidence. And I'm always on the underdog side, and so I feel like the people that have to make the case that Tyler Robinson did it were actually, like, trying to make a legit, like, hey, there's some weird stuff going on. So I don't really know where I stand on it, but I think both of them, like Andrew Wilson, like, I don't know. I don't, like, they're, again, he's just assuming Tyler did it because there's no other option. So I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they just sort of are accepting the story as it's laid out. To me, the problem is that there are holes in that story and there are some inconsistencies. There are some timeline questions to all of it. But at the end of the day, Tyler Robinson is alive, right? He's going to get to prepare and present his defense. He can testify if he wants. If this is fake, I imagine he'll come out and say, I never wrote those letters. I never wrote those text messages. I never turned myself in. I never confessed. I mean, there's a time for him to do that, and it may be, you know, coming up, but I haven't seen his defense make that case yet, so I have a hard time making it in their stead.
Yeah, and can I say one more thing?
Yeah, please.
You know, he brought up, like, the FBI finding the gun, like, that was a ground. I mean, do these people know how patsies and cover-up works? Just because you see him on video, I mean, they when everything was coming out on the case, like, oh my god, this video evidence and this, and then I'm like, dude, it's a patsy. You get a guy walking around, you have the FBI plant a gun, and everything, all the evidence that they're saying is there, is just a part of the cover-up. And I know, like, I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me. And then they're saying that the, I mean, is it really about whether the bullet would go through his neck or would it just blow a hole open? It would just blow a hole open that would make his neck look like hamburger beef patty. Like, I don't know, dude. To me, it would just look so different. And then is that other video, that other guy fake? Did they talk about that? Or, I mean, the guy doing the army crawl and stuff and then flipping out like a foldable gun or something? That's weird. I don't know.
No, it's...
And listen, Charlie wasn't totally, listen, yeah, he was pro, like, Nick Fuentes is like, dude, and Tim Pool said the same thing. They're like, they're trying to say that he was against Israel. He supported Israel. It's like, yeah, but there was glimpses of him not being full psychotic. Like, he was a reasonable guy, actually. He was actually, like, I don't know, like, I actually used to not like him at all, but the more and more that I got into him, like, dude, this guy could actually be legit.
And yeah, well, and look, I always gave Charlie huge credit for the way he responded to the Groyper War, because people, you know, came and interrupted him and asked him very pointed questions about American support for Israel, his support for homosexuality, this sort of stuff. And to his credit, he was like, I'm losing these debates. I need to change my position. He was starting to change his position. I mean, again, you can speculate, and I've made the case, and you know, like the day after it happened, I made this case and haven't really changed my mind since, which is if you are Israel and you have this massive asset in Charlie Kirk and he looks like he's flipping from being an asset to being a major antagonist to you, which is what would happen if, you know, he flipped on Israel, that would be a major blow to them. And I could see the reasoning that would say you don't wait until he changes to take him out. You take him out before he changes, so he can be your champion, your martyr. But if that was the case, then they would have had a Palestinian shoot him. They would have had a pro, you know, Islam person shoot him, so he can make hay out of that. Things would have looked a little bit different, in my opinion, if that had been the case. However, I think it's perfectly valid supposition, you know, to make a theory to run with. And again, you can make the argument. And the thing is, the way I approach all of this stuff is like, okay, the powers that be have enormous ability to sway things one way or the other. They can, and you get a friendly judge, you get a judge that's on your side, you get a judge that will do favors for you. You can change the outcome of any proceedings that you want. I mean, judges have enormous leeway in their own courtrooms to decide things one way or the other, to arbitrarily. You can say Alex Jones can't bring up the First Amendment in his free speech case. Like, they can just do that sort of stuff. So there are ways that they can control things, but they're still human beings. They still have to contend with human will. They still have to be worried about leaving evidence. They still have to have a plan that corresponds with and conforms to physical reality, right? So think about it in this way. What would the planning session be like? What would the roundtable discussion look like when they're putting forward the plan to kill Charlie Kirk with a the exploding microphone? And there get to be times where in the imagined conversation, things start to not make sense anymore. Like, would they really get together and go, okay, we're going to put the device in and it'll be on his chest and it'll take him out, but we can't have people know that it's the microphone. So what we need is a shooter in place where they could snipe him. So he'll have a gun and he'll sneak into position and he'll aim the gun. And then we'll have a device that has the sound of gunfire at the same time as the explosion. Would somebody sitting around that table not just go, if we're putting a sniper in place, should we not just use the sniper? What is the benefit exactly of using an exploding microphone? You have to have the two sounds simultaneous. If there's even a millisecond delay, it'll be an obvious scam. Like, that's a huge point of failure that you're creating when it's not necessary. I get that we need a patsy, so we're going to have somebody on the roof, but if they're going to be up on the roof with a sniper rifle, should they not just take, is that not the easier thing to do? Then we avoid all of these, potential, points of failure with the microphone and where you put it, and the explosion has to be timed perfectly, and you have to have the guy get up on the roof, because if the guy doesn't get up on the roof with the gun, then you can't have the explosion go off because you don't have the patsy to blame it on. And it's like, when you think about it that way, and I've said the same thing about like 9/11, where it's like, if you're planning it, are you going to get a plane full of people and gas them and remove them off and then destroy the plane somewhere and then build a holographic plane and align all the cameras with it? Or are you just going to fly a plane into the building? Like, at the end of the day, that's the easiest thing to do. Why would that not be the thing that they did? Now, you can say, well, it was remote-controlled planes. The people that were blamed weren't the actual ones. All that's still valid. But why, if you're planning out this mission, would you add all of these variables, all of which become a point of failure, all of which complicate the scheme and make it less likely to succeed and more likely you get caught, if you got a guy with a sniper rifle in a position where he can kill Charlie Kirk? Why would you not have that dude kill Charlie Kirk? So now you're not talking about drones. You're not talking about exploding microphones. Let's just establish the fact. I think it is a fact, and I thought it from the moment I saw the first video of it, that Charlie Kirk was shot by a sniper. That doesn't mean it was Tyler Robinson. It doesn't mean he was acting alone. That doesn't mean no other international, people were in on it. But can we start with that? Can we at least establish that no matter what, it's a conspiracy, it's a lone wolf, he probably really was shot from the roof? And you can debate the, caliber and the ballistics and all that stuff. Okay, you can get into those weeds, but we still acknowledge that Charlie Kirk was shot from an elevated position, and now everything else can start with that basis and not go off into the weeds about all this other stuff that genuinely doesn't make any sense. This is the way I think about these things. So if you were to ask me what I think the most, reasonable conspiracy that says, if you think Israel killed Charlie Kirk, what would be your evidence, or how would this have gone about? I'd say, okay, I think they had a professional sniper, probably an Israeli guy. They may have, inside information, since there's a lot of people very high up in Israel that, know Charlie intimately well. So again, you wouldn't have to have security in on it for security to be a valuable asset for the people carrying this out. Maybe they talk to him. Hey, what's your plan for security this week? You doing anything about the rooftops? Okay, you're taking care of that. That's fine. So you'd have a guy on the rooftop. He'd shoot Charlie Kirk. He would get off the roof and run to a waiting car in a place where, there's no security footage, no security cameras. Then you'd race them to the airport, have him hop on a private jet, take off, turn off the transponder, and he's, home and away to Israel. And you have a patsy and maybe a prepared, evidence and stuff that you allow to be drip fed out over the ensuing 24 hours to frame it on this Tyler Robinson guy. And you either have him and his family blackmailed or bribed or in on it or not, or brainwashed or MKUltra or something else. But it's not that far-fetched. It's not that crazy of an idea. Now, you start adding in exploding microphones, now you're complicating it significantly. You start adding in elements of TPUSA being involved, now you're in the realm of fantasy, I think. Because again, you know, from the very beginning, there were these questions about, like, well, he was doing this Doge thing about TPUSA, and they, you know, they'd stolen $1 million. And it's like, just think about it logically. Just think about it logically. I mean, if that was the case, let's say somebody at TPUSA got sticky fingers, thought they were being real clever, thought they could just siphon away a couple dollars here or there, and before you know it, they got $1 million off. Now, that person who did that, they don't seem like a hardened, like, if that actually happened, I don't know if it did. This is sort of the vaguest supposition that I've heard people talk about. Do you realize what a jump it is from I you know, illegally paid myself more than my salary to I shot a guy in the neck in front of a crowd? Like, that's not how criminality works. That's not how this works. People don't get caught, you know, stealing something. You know, they get caught for a crime, 5 years in prison at most. And to cover that up, they murder a public figure right out in the open in front of everybody. Like, what? Why would they do that? Why would they do that? That's so much worse than stealing money. That's such a more intense crime, and you're going to have so much more scrutiny on you. And, like, why would you not just get the money and go to Tahiti and never be seen again? Like, the jump from, oh, Charlie is suspicious of about money being missing, to let's shoot him in the neck on live TV in front of a crowd. Like, that's not how this works, y'all. It's really not. It's really not. Especially if the whole point was just to get rid of Charlie because he was going to catch you stealing money, then you could freaking poison his cereal, right? The reason it was done in public was either because it was a legitimate psychopath, like they're saying Tyler Robinson is, who just needed Charlie to be in a public place because that's where they were going to target him. Because they can't target him at home if they don't know where he is and what he's doing. They go to the public place to find him. Or because it was a conspiracy and they wanted to kill Charlie in a public way in order to instigate a psychological operation, like I think was an aspect of the 9/11 attacks, where they didn't just want to kill Americans. They wanted to have a display. They wanted to have an image burned into your mind that defined the century going forward. So that's my take on all of it. You can make the case for Israel being involved. You can make the case for a leftist conspiracy. The problem is everybody who talks about this stuff every single day on every one of their shows cannot make the case for some reason. It's crazy. It genuinely is crazy. That, like, you can watch an hour of this content 5 days a week for 10 months straight, and you never get just a coherent explanation of a theory, contrary to the official one. Crazy. Let's go to Tom in Colorado now. We're about to go to break. I've rambled for too long. We'll go to break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We'll pick it up with Tom from Colorado. We still got Chad and Friendly from Minnesota, Buck in Wisconsin, and we'll be taking your calls throughout the show today. 512-266-0642. Still a lot of news to cover as well. We're going to talk about more of the revelations about COVID, the mass murder that occurred with that. We're also going to get into TOCA, which we talked about before with their connection to Flock, but it's a lot more information out there that you need to know. So stay tuned. Second half begins in 2 minutes.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Calls still pouring in. I want to remind you, folks, the only way to support us is by going to thealexjonesstore.com. It's the only way that we get any income. We don't really have sponsors to point you to. We certainly don't have billionaires opening their pockets to us. We rely on you supporting us and yourself by going to thealexjonesstore.com. It's a true 360 win. Meaning that you are getting a fantastic product, but you're also helping keep us on the air and dealing a black eye, metaphorically, to the New World Order. But most of all, you're getting a fantastic product that is going to benefit you, especially when paired with, you know, diet and lifestyle changes. But really, you know, the best reason to go tonight and soon, there's two best reasons. If you order something over $100 or spend $100 or more, you get a free cooler with your order, but that ends tonight. It's a limited edition design, and once it's gone, it is not coming back. So any order over $100 gets that free cooler, and no matter what you spend, you're going to get entries to win both the 2026 Ram 2500 Laramie and a 2026 Ford F-250 Super Duty plus $20,000 in cash. Every $100 you spend gets 10,000 entries, but this double up offer ends tonight. Someone's got to win it. It's probably somebody listening to my voice right now. All you have to do is go to thealexjonesstore.com, make a purchase, and be entered to win one or both of these incredible cars. With that, we'll go back out to your calls. Talk a little bit more about the Candace Owens, Andrew Wilson debate. But then I do want to get into some of the big tech companies that are working feverishly behind the scenes to establish the control grid, including ones that you may not have heard before, but are going to play a very big role in your enslavement if you're not aware of them. Let's go to Tom in Colorado. Do we already listen to Tom? Were we talking to him earlier? Tom, do we hear you earlier? You're on the air.
A limited edition design. And once it's gone, it is not coming back.
Hey, wait,
back.
That's me. If you can turn your radio down, Tom, we'll go to you now. But sounds like he's listening to the show a few seconds. And Tom, are you there? All right, let's go to Chad in Minnesota. Wants to talk about the debate. Chad, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for the time. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a waste of time. I watched just a small portion of it this morning, and the debate, obviously. And I'm just curious, I didn't watch much, so maybe I think you had mentioned that you watched the entirety of it.
I watched a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Do you know if they discussed the Cash Patel angle and the FBI with him shutting down the foreign intelligence probe?
They certainly mentioned it. I don't know if they didn't really get to any conclusion on anything, but certainly his name was brought up.
That would be my number one, I guess, overall, is try to debate and go into fine detail as to why that happened, what occurred, who was involved. It sounds obviously like Joe Kent was, the source of that. Tulsi Gabbard was there, obviously. So, and then that information broke on your, the station, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, like, we broke that.
So I find it interesting that, if it wasn't, I don't know, I didn't watch it. So if it wasn't pursued or if they didn't debate much about it, that just seems very odd. And I think it's convenient that they didn't find, or Tyler Robinson didn't turn himself in a short period of time to get like a gunshot residue test. I don't think that's ever been brought up. I know the ballistic test has been brought up or was examined, but a gunshot residue would have cleared that whole thing up. So I don't know. Maybe there was some planning on when to have himself, supposedly turn himself in. I think that's convenient for that aspect. I feel like the intelligent aspect of it, if we can't get any information out of our own FBI, and if they have to work with the CIA or DNI and all that just goes sideways, I think that's the answer that, is pretty much telling us what's going on there, in my opinion. So,
yeah, it's definitely, a gap in knowledge that has yet to be filled, yet to be explained convincingly why the apparently very real. But, there's other stuff about this, and this is the type of thing that I'm like, I really don't get it, and it makes me suspicious of Candace, some of these things. So, like, there was the text message that Candace, and very early on in the whole thing, Candace released text messages of Charlie Kirk saying, "I'm done with the Israeli cause, and I'm leaving." And these text messages came from the government, meaning they were turned in as evidence. And then when she presented it, the veracity of it was confirmed because Andrew Colvett said he was the one that provided those text messages. So, okay, when Charlie Kirk is killed and the FBI goes to his close associates and says, "Who do you think killed him? Do you have any idea who might be behind this?" And Andrew Colvett himself provides text messages pointing the finger at Israel. Are we taking this into account? Because now Andrew Colvett, his response might be a little bit more understandable. In other words, he just saw his boss and good friend murdered. He apparently had some suspicion that it could have been Israel. He turned that information into the government, and now Candace Owens is blowing up his spot and going, this guy thinks Israel killed him. I can see Andrew Colvette being like, what? No, that's crazy. I would never think that. It's like this type of thing just gets lost in the mix where it's like Andrew Colvette's the bad guy who's, you know, covering everything up. And it's like, but he's the one that originally seemed to be suggesting to the government that they look into Israel. So how does that fit in to the mosaic? And does that not explain some of his behavior afterwards? That maybe he's in a spot where he thinks that his boss just got killed by a foreign state and now he might be the one with the target on his back, and that might inform how he, you know, does things. It's that type of stuff that it's like, I guess it's kind of inconvenient because it makes it less of a black and white Candace versus TPUSA thing to say that, well, TPUSA was the one providing this data to the government to look at Israel. But like, you got to incorporate, that is what happened. So you, even if it makes it a little bit less clean cut, if you exclude that part, you're going to be off the mark. You're not going to be pursuing the truth. You're pursuing something else. So it's stuff like that in all of this that just gets missed or left out on purpose. And that's the type of thing that I think if Candace was genuinely trying to find the truth and was genuine in what she says her drive is and why she's doing all of this, then wouldn't you want to factor that in? I mean, wouldn't you want to put that into the pile of evidence that you're going through? And for some reason, it just is looked over or ignored. And I don't get that. Do you see what I'm? Do I see what I mean, Chad? Am I making any sense here?
Yeah, absolutely. It feels like a convenience thing or something that just if you're not paying attention. You know, it's really easy to just. That limited hangout feel of a lot of stuff where it's like you talk about a lot of things that make sense and then it's, you know, obviously you can be speculative, but then, you know, you'll throw something in there that just, you just say, wait a minute, what?
What's going on here?
That just doesn't. But, you know, hey, I totally agree with that. You know, I want to just real quick with COVID, what you had mentioned earlier, I'm glad that you talk about the fact that there is the aspect of, listen, you know, it wasn't a leak or it wasn't a lab leak. You could say that and okay, well, a lab leak, but it was intentionally released. Or was there even a virus? I mean, I know that the FOIA thing is out there, and you know, do they actually have it contained? Have we seen, you know, that sort of thing? You can go in multiple different directions, but I think it's key that you discuss that because it wasn't. The players that are involved, like Dr. Robert Kadlec and Fauci and Collins and those individuals, they, you know, you talk about limited hangout. Kadlec came out in November 2023 and was interviewed and said, yeah, I had that conversation with Collins and Fauci that we had to get up ahead of this, you know, that people were starting to discuss the lab leak theory. And they never discussed the fact that was it released intentionally. They just say it's a lab leak. And that's a huge factor. And that's how these players work this, where they kind of, you know, they pit each other against each other, but they're all in it together. And it's just like WWE, you know, it's great that they're going after him, but there's many other, Dr. Robert Kadlec, everybody should look into that guy. There's a lot of information about His ties with the weapons of mass destruction, the anthrax, he was working for. Look at his resume. He's been behind a lot of all of the HHS, the ASPR, BARDA. But he currently has that, I think he's assistant director of nuclear deterrence and chemical and biological warfare. I mean, that's a big position. People need to look into that guy. He is shady, and I think he knows a lot more than what, you know, is being led on. And he's just, I think that that's on top of Collins, Fauci, but Kadlec has been around since Bush. So he's prior, and also Barrick with having the information or having the lab that created remdesivir.
Right.
Like, how come that's not out there? So there's a lot of stuff, but I'm glad that you're talking about that because that's a huge factor in all of this. And I think it plays into what they're doing with their limited hangout kind of special operations thing that they got going on. So thank you for your time.
Well,
Harrison. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. And on that note, again, you know, it's bittersweet. It's like, yeah, we told you so. You know, we were right about this. At the same time, there's something so, I don't know, just it's like flat. It's like the stuff gets revealed and it's like, no, this should be inspiring a revolution. People should hang for this, literally, after a trial, obviously. But top NYC doc says ventilators were overused during peak of COVID-19. Ventilators were used too much during the height of COVID-19 pandemic in New York and turned out to be less effective than other treatments. I think this is actually an article from 2020, but the latest studies were saying that, yeah, ventilators probably killed more people than they saved, which is what we knew the entire time, and that's what remdesivir, you know, contributed to those deaths. And we would report at the time that nurses were calling it run death is near because they knew that remdesivir simply killed the people that it was supposed to help and that it was the only cure or treatment or anything that was allowed, despite the fact that there were things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Those, of course, had to be prevented and called horse face and discredited so they could have the emergency use authorization. So, yeah, I mean, just scam upon scam. Totally outrageous. Then nothing has been done about this yet. In fact, I mean, there are some things happening that I have to celebrate, you know. The Trump administration, and I don't know if it's just because they're really feeling the heat and starting to realize how close we are to the midterms and like, oh, gee, we better do something for somebody like now because we're running out of time. But J.D. Vance has come out making an announcement about charging people over gender surgery, which, again, is good. And I hope we're taking this as seriously as we should. Let's go to clip number two here. For years now, some hospitals and healthcare providers have been subjecting children to horrific experimental treatments in service of radical gender ideologies. Today, thanks to the Wolves in White Coats report released by HHS.gov, we know why for profit. Here's J.D. Vance announcing the federal referrals of hospitals named in his HHS report on pediatric gender medicine and insurance billing. Let's watch.
Hey, everybody. This is Vice President J.D. Vance. I'm here with my friends and colleagues, of course, our great Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Admiral Brian Christine, the Assistant Secretary for Health. Parents bring their children to doctors because they trust them. They trust doctors to tell them the truth, and they trust hospitals to put their children ahead of ideology and profit. But when that trust gets violated, parents deserve to have a government that will stand up for them and for their kids and do something about it. Today, the Trump administration is proud to announce we're doing exactly that.
Today, HHS released Wolves in White Coats, a report examining pediatric gender medicine and insurance billing across America. The findings raise serious questions about what families were told, what insurers were told, and how these procedures were billed.
Today, Secretary Kennedy and I referred hospitals and clinics identified by this review to the Department of Justice and the HHS Inspector General for possible violations of federal law. These allegations are crazy, and they demand investigation. When children may have been harmed and families misled, it's on those of us in power to find the truth and to seek justice for kids who are harmed by these doctors.
Under the previous administration, my predecessor, Richard Levine, promoted what he called gender-affirming care for minors. And there's nothing caring about that. These are sex-rejecting, mutilating, transgender procedures promoted by the Biden administration. And thanks to President Trump's leadership, we're changing course. The Wolves in White Coats report issued by my office at HHS examines a medical system that subjected children to profound interventions while serious questions remained about evidence, about informed consent, and about financial incentives. The report found more than 225 hospitals and health systems established pediatric gender programs nationwide where they preyed on vulnerable children and told families that their kids needed life-altering medical treatments, when what they really needed was compassion and counseling.
So many of these people got rich, not by doing what was good for the patient, but by actually mutilating these kids. It was disgraceful. And if someone broke the law, we are going to hold them accountable.
If the medical establishment failed children, we will confront that failure and restore the sacred duty to do no harm.
And if our public health institutions lost the trust of American families, we're going to earn it back with truth, with transparency, and with gold standard science.
Together, we're going to protect our children, and importantly, we're going to restore trust in public health. When you walk into the doctor's office, you have to know that they're going to do the best by yourselves, by your children, by your family. And we will hold accountable anyone who would betray that trust. We've got so many great doctors. We can't have a few bad doctors tarnish the whole lot. Thank you, everybody.
So it's absolutely incredible. This is the type of stuff that the Trump administration should have been doing this entire time. Actually going after the people that are targeting our kids, actually going after the hospitals that are tricking children into experimental procedures that literally cripple them for life in some cases. And we've played the videos. You know, one of the gender-affirming care doctors admits, she's like, yeah, once you do this procedure, you will basically never experience sexual satisfaction again, which it's like, you're doing that to children. You are depriving children of one of the greatest joys of life for all time because you tricked them with a Blue's Clues cartoon into thinking that liking dolls means they need to chop their nuts off. Like, it's so evil what they're doing. And this is maybe the first time ever that we've seen an official from the American government treat this like what it actually is, an attack on children, a exercise in complete fraud, and really a violent crime that's despicable. I'm not interested in Republicans going, well, you know, we got to care for our transgender students. Well, they need to feel like they're accepted as well. It's like, do you not understand this is an attack? Genuinely, what is going on with you? And I'm talking about this with, you know, parents that I know in my life where, like, their kid comes back home from kindergarten thinking they're a different gender, and I have to explain to them, like, that's an attack. Your child was propagandized. Because the parent, they're just like, oh, this is weird. They're just like, what? He thinks he's a girl? And it's like, this is kind of, then they go and they say, hey, what's going on? Why does he think? And they go, oh, well, this is, you know, something that you need to accept and, you know, help them work through it. And they get the advice and the parents don't know what the hell's going on. So they're just like, oh, okay. It's kind of weird. I don't really get it. But if it helps them, you know, find themselves, I'll do whatever I can. And it's like, no, your child has been propagandized by somebody who hates them. They've been convinced of a psychotic lie. They're being indoctrinated into a satanic religion that demands that they deform themselves permanently for mental health that they've been injected with, that didn't exist before they were propagandized into it. Like, what do you not understand? This is an attack. So, you know, J.D. Vance and RFK Jr. might not have gone quite that far, but certainly treating this with the, you know, simultaneously the disrespect and the respect it deserves, right? The disrespect it deserves is the army man on the right there saying, my predecessor, Richard Levine, right? Because we're not going to play along and pretend that a man named Richard with long blonde stringy hair is actually a woman named Rachel. We're not going to do that. That's not reality. We're not going to engage and entertain your bizarre fantasy fetish, okay? So that's the disrespect that this whole thing deserves. But the respect that it deserves is saying this is not an accident. This isn't misguided people. This is an attack on our children, our way of life, our reality itself. And you can't just shrug it off or you change your own way of life, you know, to comport with this newly imagined phenomenon. No, it's an attack. It's anti- everything that is good. So let's just destroy it and crush it and not just, you know, politely ask that people not do it, but actually say you are mutilating children. We're going to stop you because it's a crime to mutilate children. What? Crazy that this is even a thing. So once again, this would have, you know, hey, February 2025, this would have been awesome. Now it's pretty good. I mean, I like it. But, you know, this is what they should have been doing literally the entire time. If the entire Trump administration had been like weekly reports like this, here's J.D. Vance talking about how they're going to punish doctors who push transgenderism. Amazing. You know, here's the deportation numbers. We got out 1 million this week. We just set a record. Fantastic. Like, and again, we, it's not like we, there's a barrier to this in reality. It's not like we don't have the money or the resources or anything necessary to get this done. We're just not doing it. So it's very frustrating. It's good to see this. Better late than never. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services released a report Thursday identifying millions of dollars in insurance claims that billed for underage gender transition procedures under false pretenses. This is from AlexJonesLive.com. The 64-page report called Wolves in White Coats, How Doctors and Hospitals Pushed and Profited from the Fraud of Gender Medicine, examined more than 225 hospitals and health systems nationwide that offer pediatric gender programs by reviewing scientific literature, hospital records, whistleblower accounts, insurance claims, and interviews with parents, patients, and their parents. It found approximately $50 million in insurance claims for puberty blockers billed using endocrine disorder diagnostic code E34.9. It further reported that nearly $11 million in claims for patients 13 through 17 were billed using a diagnosis code for precocious puberty. Findings, the report said, warrant additional review of insurance coding practices. So in other words, you can have a legitimate disease or condition like early onset puberty or, you know, endocrine disruption, precocious puberty, that's, you know, early, you know, puberty setting in early than is natural. And there are medicines to deal with those diseases. Now they want those medicines, but the person that they're prescribing it to doesn't actually have the disease. They're using it recreationally or, you know, they're choosing to use it to try to stop puberty from happening, not because it's precocious puberty that would lead to health issues down the line. It's a choice they're making. And this is good. Yeah, it's cosmetic, I guess, surgery is how you could phrase it, which obviously insurance wouldn't cover things you're choosing to do that you don't need. And this goes back to, like, I bet we can find videos from 2021 where I'm covering this, because some of the earliest coverage I did about transgenderism stuff on War Room or on American Journal at the time was about the change in definition of what defines transgenderism. And how it was changed in a very particular way. Remember, it used to be body dysmorphia, which means that there's a problem between your perception and your body. Anorexia would be a body dysmorphia because while you may be incredibly skin, your brain processes the image of your own body as being very fat. And that's a problem. And it causes you actual pain because then you're treating your body as if it doesn't need food when it does. So that's dysmorphia. Dysphoria says your body is correct, it's your brain that's wrong. Or it's the other way around. Your brain is right, your body is wrong. Like, it's a subtle change, and it's a change of definition, but the reason they did it was because they wanted to both say it's not a mental illness, being that the person's crazy. It's a physical deformity, so it's not a mental illness, they're not crazy, but also it still needs to be covered by insurance. It's very particular, and that's why they named it the way that they did, because they wanted the procedures covered by insurance, but they knew that it was elective.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you, Meta, Facebook is watching you, Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.